Good afternoon. The time is 2 o'clock. Welcome to Vox Pop for this Wednesday, October 25th. I'm Ray Graff. The Los Angeles Dodgers have taken the first game of the World Series against the Houston Astros. Meanwhile, in the NFL, the Giants stink. The Patriots are pretty good. The Knicks stink in the NBA. Oh, there's plenty to talk about today. We'll discuss the wide world of sports, all of that and much more, with Brittany Devane of CBS 6 in Albany and Keith Strudler of Montclair State University. And we want to hear from you. Give us a call, 800-348-2551. 800-348-2551. It's sports today, and we'd love to hear from you. You can also email the program, voxpop@wamc.org. We'll get underway right after the news. Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. The Los Angeles Dodgers are up 1-0 against the Houston Astros in the World Series. Meanwhile, the NFL, NBA, and NHL seasons are ramping up. Join us to discuss the sports world today, and we have a couple of great guests. Brittany Devane of CBS 6 in Albany is here, and Keith Strudler of Montclair State University. Brittany joined CBS 6 in August of 2015 after 3 years as a sports reporter and anchor in Bangor, Maine. Keith, as you know, is a commentator on these airwaves, and he's not shy about his opinions. He is director of the School of Communication and Media at Montclair State University and a WAMC commentator. Brittany and Keith, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Actually, Brittany, welcome to the show for the first time.
Yes, this is my first time here. I'm very happy to be here. Glad you guys thought of me.
Keith, be very kind to our guest. It's her first time. We'd like her to come back.
Well, no, I'm going to be very kind, as I always am, but I do have a little gripe. You're a BU graduate, and as a Cornell grad, I take umbrage with your hockey program, and so I just want to lay that on the table.
Sure,
of
no.
Of course, I have the.
Yeah, it's hard. Okay. It's hard to be a second place team.
Keith,
yes,
have you been
okay.
Stalking our guest again?
No. Okay. I do check the Twitter every now and then, but my wife was also a BU graduate, so obviously I've bridged that divide, so I think we'll get along for an hour. It'll be just fine.
Great taste.
Our number to call is 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551 if you have a sports question. You can also email the program, voxpop@wamc.org, voxpop@wamc.org, but again, the number on a call-in program is 800-348-2551. Clayton Kershaw looked good last night. 7 strong innings. Justin Turner hit a tie-breaking 2-run homer, and the L.A. Dodgers took a 3-1 win last night over Houston in Game 1 of the World Series. Kershaw was, 10 or 11 strikeouts into that
11.
Game. 11 strikeouts. He looked fantastic. Dallas Keuchel looked good as well, but just not as good.
Former Valley Cat Dallas Keuchel.
Isn't that exciting?
It is so exciting to get behind these guys. There's 6 former Valley Cats between the two teams. Dallas Keuchel made 2 mistakes last night, and that was the difference in the game. He pitched so well outside of that, and you're rooting for these guys, these local guys, to do well. But Justin Turner, if you're going to make a mistake, don't do it to Justin Turner. But he's going to make you pay.
I mean, you got to make him shave. Right? He's got to clip the beard, right?
I think whatever works for these guys, starting pitchers are notoriously kind of crazy when it comes to their routine and things like that. So just let it go.
Okay.
It happen.
All right. Fair enough. And could be different tonight. Now we got Verlander going for the Astros tonight. However, I don't believe the Astros have won a road game yet in the postseason.
They've won 1 road game. It was the clincher in Boston. But so it's been a while.
Yeah.
It's been a long time. It just goes to show how much home field advantage means. And this team could really make a statement tonight and turn the tides if the Astros were able to pull one out in LA tonight, because they got the next 3 at home after this. You steal one on the road and you're coasting the 3 games at home. It puts pressure on the Dodgers.
I think they need to win one tonight.
Yes.
And if you recall now, you don't necessarily need to. About 30, 31 years ago, the Mets had a little problem losing the first 2 and ended up, I think, 31 years ago today, winning the whole thing.
I would just like to remind everyone, we're talking about Clutch City, a city which has been known on the basketball side to lose a couple of games early on and come back to win series. Of course, this dates back to the 90s, but there is some history there on the Houston sports side. I would also like to point out, as someone that does not watch a lot of baseball, but unfortunately it seems like we're going to go down that lane today.
All
here,
right,
of course.
Keith, fine.
I was busy watching 90 Day Fiancé last night, Great program. It's been described as the best worst show on television. But I would also like to say it is lovely to have baseball played in October when it's still warm out. It seems like for the past several years we've been struggling with watching players with their hands shivering and the fans kind of, you know, in blankets. It's like 100 degrees out there yesterday. And so, and they'll move to Houston where not only is it warm, but they have a roof as well. So I like seeing baseball played in its natural environs, regardless of what month it is.
Yeah, I'd be interested to hear what the players have to say. Would they take the colder temperatures or the 104-degree heat in L.A. yesterday? Because that must have been brutal.
You know, a little inside baseball here, Brittany, since it's your first time on the show.
Lay it on me.
Keith really doesn't like baseball or many sports that are popular here.
It's not like. I think that's an unfair way to put it. I just find it to be a relatively arcane sport. Now, I watch a lot of youth baseball. Both my kids are involved in baseball leagues. Against sometimes their better wishes because they care more deeply about soccer. But I would say that at times, and I grew up in Houston. I should care about this series very deeply. It is hard for me to watch the Houston Astros play representing the American League. I will never get over that.
Keith,
and watching the Dodgers play the Astros in the World Series is kind of mind-blowing.
Keith, do you also dislike apple pie?
No, I don't. And see, that's that's a bastardization of this argument, right? You know, as someone put it, I'm stealing now from someone. All thumbs are fingers. All fingers are not thumbs. I apologize to the person I stole that from.
Don't worry. This is public radio. You get a lot of that sort of thing, fingers and thumbs. Well, Justin Verlander on the Hill tonight, and he is perfect in a Houston uniform. 4-0, a 1.46 ERA this postseason. 9-0 since the Astros traded for him right before the trade deadline. So this should be a big night. And I think, I forget who the Dodgers are throwing.
Rich Hill.
And he's so right.
Yeah. Why can't, you know, Boston teams get anybody like Rich Hill? Former Red Sox.
So are you a Red Sox fan? You came from Massachusetts?
I did. I grew up 25 minutes outside the city. My freshman dorm looked right over Fenway Park. So I was brought up a Red Sox fan. I get grief from my family now because I was cheering for the Yankees. It sounds so weird to say, but I was in, you know, because of the local ties and Tommy Kahnle.
Right.
Was, you know, obviously from here, relief pitcher for the Yankees. So I wanted to cover a local guy going to the World Series, but
did the Astros cost you a trip to the series? Did that happen?
In full, you know, full disclosure, my postseason credentials got denied from MLB.
Really?
So, yes.
I've been there.
Yeah.
Well, now that you've been on this program, that will not happen again.
Nope, that's going to be first line of my resume from now on. There's no way they're denying me next time. But it should be another great pitching matchup tonight. And, hey, hopefully it takes another 2.5 hours to finish that game because that was a nice one. Under 3 hours.
This was the way it was when I was a lad in the early 70s. I remember going to a game, and I forget who was pitching for the Dodgers, but Seaver pitched for the Mets, and I believe it was like an hour and 58. And that was not out of the question in those days.
Of course, before television, before they had to take TV time out.
Okay, thanks, Keith Strudler. Okay, I'm so glad you're on the ISDN today because if you were in this room, boy.
It's working. It's working just fine.
Yeah, the fidelity is great. Yeah, I'll give you that. 800-348-2551 if you have a sports question to ask our team today. Brittany Devane of CBS 6, Keith Strudler of Montclair State University, who is joining us from a remote location today, thankfully. The Giants, I'm a Giants fan, and I got to tell you, it has been one of those years.
Yeah.
Having grown up in the 70s, when they didn't win between 1973 and when I was a senior in high school, I'm used to this, but Jerry Reese, who's the general manager, accepting responsibility for the dismal play this season. I don't know if you saw that in the news. He said, yeah, it's on me. He said he put the current roster together, so the blame falls on him.
Well, you look at some of the things he did with his offensive playmakers and loading up at those positions, but then you look at the offensive line and how is Eli Manning going to get the ball to those playmakers if the offensive line isn't protecting him, if he's not staying upright throughout the game?
That's on Reese.
Yes.
He had all that time in an offseason when everybody, even people like Keith Strudler, who hates football, said the Giants need a better I'm sorry?
Unfair.
No?
Professional football, I'm not. I prefer the college game, of course.
Yes.
You know, where they play for the love of the sport, as we all know.
But even people like Keith Strudler knew the Giants' offensive line needed some retooling in the offseason, and Jerry Reese did none of it.
It's pretty inexcusable at this point. You look at your franchise quarterback. You're one of a few teams in the entire NFL who has a very good quarterback, and you see the parity at that position. But the same thing with Aaron Rodgers. You got to protect these guys better because their window is only so long. And at the beginning of the year, this team had Super Bowl aspirations, but you can't not protect Eli Manning.
Yeah.
And that's a big one. I think they thought that problem would be overshadowed, but you can't hide the offensive line.
Absolutely.
Would you actually suggest that Eli Manning is truly a franchise quarterback? And I say this with all due respect to the Manning family, of
Absolutely.
Course. But do you think that he is truly a franchise quarterback or a very strong team manager that was put in very good situations to win some games?
He's a Hall of Famer.
Obviously a couple of Super. I mean, is he?
Yes.
Is he really?
Yes, he is. Look at his numbers.
Why?
I don't know about Hall
Thank you.
Of Fame.
Oh. Thank you. But is he that good? I mean, skill set wise, is he that good? Is he
yes.
that effective?
Yes.
Would you take Eli and his rings over a
Philip Rivers? Yes.
Yeah,
of
exactly.
Yes,
I don't think
he's a better quarterback than Philip Rivers.
But he's a franchise quarterback.
He's the MVP of two Super Bowls.
I don't know what
How's
that means,
Philip Rivers doing? You know, let's take a break. Keith needs to get a cool drink. Brittany Devane is here. Our number is 800-348-2551. I've had it up to here with both of them, but we have a long way to go, and we'll be right back.
Support for WAMC comes from Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine. Exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and now new American-made frames where eyewear is an art. VisionExcelEyeCare.com. George Heigl Antiques, Boston Spa, New York, offering estate sales services, including management, appraisals, and evaluations for individuals, families, and businesses, 518-396-7974. The Department of Theater Arts, SUNY New Paltz, A Midsummer Night's Dream, Shakespeare's comedy retold for today, November 9th through 19th, newpaltz.edu/theater. The Albany Pine Bush Preserve, presenting opportunities to the capital region to take guided hikes to observe the fall foliage. Pre-registration is required, albanypinebush.org. And Interactive Media Consulting, a team of online market strategists providing websites, branding, and digital marketing to the capital region and beyond since 1996. imediaconsult.com.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. 800-348-2551 is the telephone number. We're joined today by Brittany Devane of CBS 6. She is the sports director there. Keith Strudler is with Montclair State University and is the director of the School of Communication and Media and a WAMC commentator. And Brittany, you have a show in the late evening, later than I'm usually up.
Yes, and it would be later than I would be up if I was not anchoring the show and co-anchoring with my two reporters and co-anchors, Gardner Royce and Chet Davis. It's 10:30. It's a half an hour of all local sports, Monday through Friday, and it's on CW15. So.
That's cool. So you can find that on your cable provider.
Yes.
Or it's over the air. Is it over the air as well?
I believe it would be. I would think you would just hit 15 and it'd be
there. Yeah, you're
there.
Probably right.
Listen,
it's been so long.
I'm always there when it's on, so
well,
I've never,
right.
You know, it's hard for me to watch.
Well, there's some local stuff going on. We have arena football headed back to our region.
Yes,
in Albany. The official announcement was, it was made on Tuesday, and we had Dick Vermeil there and Ron Jaworski there, and they're owners of the team?
They are part owners of the team. They had a very animated press conference yesterday, and we were there, and we did kind of the nuts and bolts of arena football coming back to the area on yesterday's show, the Upstate Sports Edge, that half an hour show at 10:30 I was just telling you about.
Good plug.
Thank you very much. Well, tonight we are going to be airing more of those press conferences. So if you want to hear from Ron Jaworski or Dick Vermeil more, there's plenty more where it came from, and we're going to be airing it tonight. And they're excited to bring the team back here. Of course, we remember the old Albany Firebirds.
I remember going to those games, or at least a couple of those games, Touchdown Eddie Brown and whatnot.
Yes, we had Touchdown Eddie Brown on the show earlier
really?
This year as well. He was back in the area trying to hype up a flag football team that he, you know, was coming back, and this flag football team was saying, you know, we want to draw on the inspiration of the AFL when it was here. So they brought down Touchdown Eddie Brown, and he had so many great things to say about his memories and how he wouldn't have done his career any differently than what he did. And so that was really cool to hear. So who's going to be the next touchdown Eddie Brown?
Well, we'll find out. And there's no name yet for this team. But, Keith, do you have a suggestion?
No, I could sarcastically say eventually out of business. I'm surprised, to be honest, that the arena – well, no, and this is, I think, a larger question about arena football, which is a fun product, no question. I'm interested, though, to see how kind of the second-tier football products can exist in an era where football is having some solvency issues, you know, down the road, certainly as things like CTE become more and more potentially catastrophic to the league. Obviously, the finances are still very strong for the NFL, and even more so, I would say, for college football, which is very robust and was an underpriced property for quite some time. But, you know, I think ratings have been down for the NFL. I think there are going to be some cracks in the armor potentially. And so it's hard for me to envision a future where a secondary football league in the United States, perhaps overseas, but in the United States will find a real good foothold. And I think, look, arena football has always struggled with kind of how do they stay in business? It's a very difficult kind of TV property potentially. How do they make it work? And obviously going to the markets that don't have the NFL, large markets that don't have that kind of property. You know, Albany's, in all fairness, Albany's a great sports town. I mean, they've supported their teams quite well. I just am unsure whether there will be the, you know, kind of the solvency behind an organization like the Arena Football League, which is, you know, a league that's gone in and out of business, I suppose, and has done best when it's had the full and utter support of the NFL.
I think they'd be wise to reach out to the Tri-City Valley Cats and even the Adirondack Thunder, who had, I think, historic attendance numbers last year. This is, speaking of the Thunder, they're a locally owned and operated team now, and they are another league and team that's investing in a professional sport here in the Capital Region. So I think that the Arena League Football would be wise to reach out to other successful ventures.
Now, it was many years ago, but I recall the first round of the Albany Firebirds, they drew quite well.
Sure.
And I think it was a bit surprising when the rug was pulled out from under that franchise and they moved, I think, to Indianapolis.
Yeah, they moved to Indiana after the 2000 season.
Yeah, and it was fun to watch. We shall see. Of course, Siena also at the Times Union Center. They're also one of the anchor properties there. And they were, the preseason MAC poll, not that good, the coaches' poll.
No, this is a team that, of course, finished just points away from a trip to the NCAA tournament last year. They fell short to Iona in the championship. They lost 4 1,000 point scorers from that team.
Yep.
So that you just don't come up with that points. You know, you don't just find it somewhere on the bench immediately. And they were picked 6th out of 11 in the MAC. Women were picked 8th in the polls. So both teams, I said it last night on air, you gotta imagine they're going to be playing with a chip on their shoulder this season after seeing that. Nico Clareth, Swaggy Nick as he's called, Siena's junior captain, was only put on the second team. He has such a high ceiling. If he can stay on the court, if he can do the things that he's capable of doing on a consistent basis, I think he ends on the first team, and he is definitely going to be playing inspired basketball this year. That's my prediction, and I don't know about a championship, but I don't think they're going to finish 6th.
Well, the good news, of course, is Marist is 10th in the
right.
Ranking.
And in all fairness, I think we finished 10th. Now, I say we. I, of course, of Marist College for 17 years before I had the opportunity to come to Montclair State.
Right.
In all fairness, Marist, I believe, did finish 10th, you know, like 5 or 6 years in a row. So I feel like, you know, we own that spot. Now, I will say, don't sleep on Mike Maker, the coach of the men's basketball coach. A wonderful guy, came from Williams College, ran a very successful program there. There have been some challenges, you know, kind of over the last, you know, shall we say decade, getting the program back together. But you know what? Don't rest on Marist for 15, 20 years. They'll come back to bite you. It's, you know, and Brittany, maybe you could speak to this a little bit more. They play really good basketball in the MAC, and I think it's sometimes undervalued. They're undersized. You don't get a lot of real big players in the MAC necessarily,
right?
But it's good basketball, and putting together a winning program, I mean, you'll see it a lot down in Iona, Manhattan, where you get a lot of the city kids, but it's not easy. I mean, and Marist had a formula years ago where they played a certain kind of basketball. They recruited a lot out of the state, a lot behind the three-point arc. They haven't been able to replicate that, but I think people do not appreciate the level of play in the MAC. Am I right on that?
I totally agree with you. And one of the shining examples of that is Monmouth. They were so good. The men's basketball team at Monmouth was so good this year. They had a number of signature wins, and they were ousted by Siena in the MAC semifinals. And all the talk all year was Monmouth, Monmouth, Monmouth. It comes down to one game, and then, you know, as a MAC team, you really need to win the conference championship to get a bid in the NCAA tournament. We had a couple local guys on that Monmouth team. We had Colin Stewart, who played at McKeel Christian Academy. We had Justin Robinson from Kingston, who's now playing professionally overseas. Those guys deserved a trip to the NCAA tournament. Now, it's hard to look at the bracket and say that team didn't deserve to go, but like you said, it is totally underrated. It would have been nice to see them get an at-large bid last year when their body of work outside of one stumble in the semifinals showed that they deserved it.
Yeah, but you can say that about so many teams on the bubble. How big can you make the bracket? Keith Strudler is here. Brittany Devane is here. And we'll take some calls at 800-348-2551. Let's go over to Steve in Pittsfield. Steve.
Hey, first, I just wanted to say I agree with you about the MAC there. I was at Siena College, and Kenny Hasbrook was on the team, and that was some fun basketball to watch. But I also wanted to chime in about Eli Manning, what you guys were talking about before. I can't believe somebody would think he's not a Hall of Famer. Like,
exactly.
He's a top 10 in almost every passer category of all time. I mean, look at the list. It goes Favre, Marino, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning, Eli Manning. Like, he's in top 10 of almost every category.
Well, here's what the nattering
yards, passing touchdowns.
Here's what the nattering nabobs will tell you, Steve, is they'll say, well, he's only there because the game has changed and he is very consistent and stays in the game, but the NFL has changed, and so that's why Eli Manning is in the top six or seven. And I say bunk.
There's a one quarterback per family rule in the Hall of Fame, which they have to go to the charter and change that. Of course, I would say whatever Ray said against Eli Manning, I agree with him on that. But secondly, I don't think he has great accuracy. I just don't see it. He had great receivers. He won games when they mattered. It's not that he's not a great player, and it's not that he didn't do a lot of great things. I just don't see him in the pantheon of shall we say, Hall of Fame. Now, I also say this. I think the Hall of Fame is one of the most, in all the sports, overrated and just ridiculous. I mean, this idea that we have to compare athletes from different, centuries and millennia just so we can have the argument about what would happen if Michael Jordan were playing like LeBron's grandkids.
It doesn't matter. We're not having that discussion here today.
No, we're not having a discussion.
Someone will have that discussion.
Not us. Above that.
Well, Steve, I'm sorry to subject you to Keith's views here, but let's just give everyone a participation prize.
Yeah, but my best advice would be go back. His second Super Bowl MVP, the second one, go back and watch the Giants' road to the playoffs. They had to go into Dallas, into Green Bay, into San Francisco, beat three very tough teams, and then beat Tom Brady, arguably the best ever, in the Super Bowl. So, I mean, go back and watch those games. Eli Manning plays some phenomenal football, if that doesn't convince you.
And you're making Brittany cry, so that's good.
That second Giants Super Bowl win was on my 21st birthday, so Eli Manning, maybe that's why I don't want him in the Hall of Fame, because he ruined my 21st birthday.
Well, Steve, thanks a lot for the call, and thank you for showing some good common sense there. Our number here is 800-348-2551. Sports today on the program, Brittany Devane of CBS 6 in Albany and Keith Strudler of Montclair State University. The connection is excellent, Keith, which is a bit disappointing.
Yeah, I think Brittany said that about her 21st birthday just to make you and I feel old, Ray. That was a backhanded compliment if I ever heard one.
Oh.
That was
to myself.
I think you and I were like, yeah. I was raising my second kid at that point.
Yeah,
okay,
no,
I
had at least, yeah.
I'm an old soul.
Well, the second one was 2011, 2012. Right, yeah. Oh, I had a couple kids by then. Let's go
over. Brittany, do you enjoy watching arena football just as a fan?
I have never seen a game.
Okay.
So, yeah.
Was that the answer you were looking
for? You will enjoy
it. No.
Before we start going down that road, let's go to Wanda in Gilderland. Wanda, you're on.
Don't make me come back there, kids. I know that Ray is expecting me to ask you a question about baseball, but I'm not going to ask you a question about baseball.
All right.
I was at the gym today, and I saw these, and I really don't know who these football players were, so you're going to have to excuse me. But there were three professional football players going to in Philadelphia trying to lobby for changes in the criminal justice system. And I'm wondering what you think about professional athletes who try to lobby for changes in politics while they're playing, because this is the football season. I'm not talking about the take the knee or anything like that, because it just seems to me that this is a real positive thing for these guys to get involved in when they're not playing. And it was a really positive story. And all I can tell you is one of the guys was named Malcolm. That's all I know.
Let's go to Keith first. Keith.
And, you know, well, what do you think?
So, to be honest, I'm not familiar of the actual of the players that you're speaking about, nor no, so I would, oh, is it Anquan Boldin was one of them?
Chris Long was one of them.
Chris Long was one.
And Anquan Boldin, by the way, who's been very outspoken and eloquent about a bunch of issues, in addition to this, certainly. Look, I think that professional athletes and collegiate athletes too, although they have less opportunity because they're so beholden to their scholarship, I think I don't necessarily they are. You know, that they are obligated to have kind of to use their platform to help change the world. But I think it is strongly encouraged. And I think they have they're one of the remaining, shall we say, heroes in American society. I mean, look, if you watch anything that's happening in the political system, anything anywhere in places where we would normally kind of admire and adhere to their voices, they just don't have that platform anymore. Athletes still do. That said, I would also say this. I think it's also very important for athletes to not simply use their voice, but to use it eloquently and with an educated perspective. And so I think the only thing that sometimes hinders that is when athletes speak without having, shall we say, the full body of knowledge. And I think a lot of people have been watching the Colin Kaepernick case to see how he's handled the progression of that story. And I think he had a couple of trips along the way, one when he admitted he didn't vote, where I think athletes have that obligation in some regards and certainly that opportunity, but they should also realize and recognize the what comes with that and the need to be well educated and prepared for the onslaught that comes with it. So yeah, it's wonderful to see athletes who are, you know, in many ways role models and often speak for a larger community to take that opportunity.
You know, before Brittany weighs in, can I just take a counterpoint here and say, why should athletes have to better educate themselves about issues when most of the talking heads you see on TV or listen to on the radio know jack squat about what they're talking about?
Isn't that the whole idea? This is the end of who was speaking about that? The end of expertise. I believe that's a book that's coming out.
Well, that's a good title. Could be my autobiography.
Look, I'm talking about baseball right now. But no, in all seriousness, I think they rightfully or wrongfully are given a platform and an opportunity. And, you know, it's not that they are morally obligated to be educated, but when they are not educated, they reinforce a stereotype and it's a missed opportunity. And so I think it behooves them to and the causes that they represent to be an eloquent, educated voice, because they're often swimming upstream, I suppose, for lack of a better way of putting it. And I think LeBron James has set a really good example of how someone who is obviously a phenomenal athlete and has a remarkable platform has also used that platform in a very, shall we say, calculated and educated way. And I think he's, you know, people like that can enact change. So, you know, it's not that they have to, but just because a bunch of crazy people go on CNN and Fox and start screaming about things they don't know anything about doesn't mean that they should do it too.
Brittany.
I seem to agree very much with what Keith has been saying for the first time all show.
Nice.
So look at us agreeing. I think that as a professional athlete, you can go one of two ways. You can either say, no, I am not a role model. This is my job. I think, you know, Magic Johnson was the one who said, I'm not a role model. Or you
that
can.
That was Charles Barkley.
Charles Barkley. Okay. Thank you. My basketball knowledge. Not up to par. You got me on the basketball side.
90s basketball. That's my wheelhouse. Let's do it. 80s, 90s basketball.
Okay.
And, or you could take the route of saying, I am going to try to make some changes, but as you were saying, these are guys that are kind of putting their money where their mouth is and not just being all talk and no action. These are guys that are showing that they're going to follow up on what they say they're going to do. So I think it's pretty admirable to see that picture the day after their Monday night football game of these Eagles players walking to the legislature.
And it's a beautiful thing. In fact, it's a free country. You're supposed to speak your mind. And I think the NFL probably loves this because it's not taking place on the field.
Sure.
And this is what about being a citizen is all about, right?
Agreed.
Strudler.
Yeah, I mean, I think the NFL has certainly an identity situation. I won't call it a crisis, but it was clear that the NFL didn't particularly love being in the position of having to decide what the American flag stood for. They had a moment of grace when they had such a clear foil in Donald Trump, and it made it easy for them to kind of unite. But the minute that there were some kinks in that armor, and when people started to say, "Oh, you know, maybe I like the flag," or maybe the bastardization of that argument really started to work against them. Particularly when they had, you know, when Jerry Jones started to kind of call to question his own athletes. So, I agree. The NFL is in some cases a no-win situation. I think the NFL, from a business perspective, would like to have two things kind of be at the forefront. One is, you know, football in America, you know, that whole kind of concept. And second, these athletes are wonderful stewards in their communities, you know, all the charity programs that they involve themselves with. I think the political space is a little bit riskier for them. Even in things that might seem to many people to be very clear and obvious, like reform of the criminal justice system, but it's a risky place. Now, on the other hand, at the very least, that keeps people from talking about concussions. So perhaps that's better. But this era of athletes as advocates, I think, is certainly it's certainly here. And I think there's a lot of reasons that's happening. And some of it is because of the inherent power shift that's happening in the economic landscape of sports, where athletes are making enough money that they are able to build their own brands to the extent that they're able to say, you know what, I don't necessarily work for the owner, but in some cases the owner works for me.
Yeah.
And I think that's changing the way in which athletes are able to speak their minds. Now, whether that works as a, you know, kind of as a business model, we are yet to find out.
Having Keith Strudler take a break, finding a break there is like finding a needle in a haystack. But he finally took a breath, and so let's take a break. 800-348-2551 is the number. Brittany Devane is here, Keith Strudler. We talk sports, and, you know, we'll throw in the occasional comma, and we'll take a call coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from Culligan Water of the Northeast for over 80 years, providing pure drinking water as well as options for problem water at home and at work. CulliganNortheast.com. The Hyde Collection, Glens Falls. Open to seniors ages 60 and older every Wednesday. HydeCollection.org for more information. Empire Exhibits and Displays, Mechanicville, New York. Supplying the greater capital region with custom display solutions, commercial casework, and interactive exhibits for trade shows, special events, and museum exhibitions, EmpireExhibits.com. Jane Iredale, a mineral makeup company specializing in makeup that is good for the skin. Jane Iredale Retail Shop at Louisa Ellis Boutique, Great Barrington, JaneIredale.com. And Penny Farthing Investment Management, Amherst, a socially conscious, fee-only investment advisor of personal, retirement, and endowment portfolios, including the Bright Penny Community Strategies, brightpenny.org.
All right, Keith, breathe deeply. It's almost time for the next paragraph. All right, so it's 800-348-2551. Sports Today with Keith Strudler of Montclair State University and also Brittany Devane of CBS 6 in Albany. The email address is voxpop@wamc.org. And this one came in from Mark via email. He says, finally, the disastrous Carmelo Anthony era is over for the Knicks. Now that they have moved on, how does the future look for the Knicks? What are their prospects? Well, Mark, I saw the first 10 minutes of last night's game, and I got to tell you, the prospects are not too good.
And Carmelo Anthony's not looking too bad in, you know, with the Thunder.
Surprise.
So, yeah, he leaves town, and he's looking good.
He looked good when he was here.
Yes, I know. The Knicks
did not look good. Have you been watching any NBA, Keith?
Yeah, a little bit, mainly Western Conference. I want to see what Ball does out in the Lakers, and I want to see what this newfangled Rockets outfit looks like. So it's hard to get too excited about shall we say, New York City basketball right now when there's a lot of good basketball being played elsewhere.
I think the Nets actually are doing okay, right? They won last night, I believe, or maybe I'm wrong. No, Brooke.
No, they lost.
They lost at the end. I'm sorry. It was a huge scoring game. It was 125 to 121.
Oh, wow.
So forget I said it. The New York basketball, not too good.
I think that that the NBA would be better and would be best served by a competitive, very good New York Knicks team. How do we get there? I'm not sure.
Well, you can't get there from here because you have an ownership issue that basically scares players away, and you have the structural issue of the NBA, which is you have to essentially build from nothing to something. And so the Knicks have been playing kind of reloading for a long, long time, and reloading doesn't work. They're not Florida State football, and so which apparently doesn't work for them now either. But it's very hard to do what the Knicks have been trying to do, particularly when you don't have a compelling owner that can kind of convince people to play there. And especially since New York is no longer an enviable spot. It used to be that playing for the Knicks meant something. I mean, when did it happen that playing in Oklahoma City would be cooler than playing in Manhattan? It's unbelievable.
I don't
know
if it's cooler, but it's certainly an opportunity to win. And I, for the record, I totally agree with you about the ownership of the Knicks team. Let's go to Cliff in Kingston. Cliff, you're on.
Hey, how you guys doing?
Good.
My comment was when teams look like they're gonna tank before, say, the All-Star break, it's always after the All-Star break that the cream comes to the top. The cream of the crop comes up.
Yeah.
And I've seen this many times with Major League Baseball, NHL hockey, NBA basketball. And the problem with the NFL is they don't put the Pro Bowl in the middle of the season.
Wow.
I mean, instead of having all these bye weeks, make one bye week the week that they have the Pro Bowl. Then they can go right to the end of the season and then do the playoffs.
Huh. Brittany Devane.
Well, I think that a lot of what you're seeing maybe has to do with teams that have nothing left to play for. Why not play to be a spoiler? So I notice that sometimes in baseball and, like you were saying, hockey, teams are not playing for themselves. They're playing against other teams, and that can be fun and kind of have a new look on the season. So that's when I think you are talking about some of the teams and players rising to the top when they have nothing left to play for. Football's a little bit crazy.
Brittany, here's the crazy thing. A lot of times the teams that are close to the bottom before the All-Star games, they seem to get their act together after the All-Star game, and the teams that are at the top seem to some stumble, the others outright fall down on their faces, and they wind up out of the picture, and the ones that were out of the picture to begin with wind up at the middle of it.
Okay.
You know, it's definitely, yeah, I totally get your point. I don't think it's a blanket statement that you can say that for every team. There's definitely a couple of situations where that is the case. Football is a totally different beast. I talk to NFL players and they say the chance I'm going to get an injury is 100%. It's how bad that is and what it does to my career in the long run. So I don't think the NFLPA will ever agree to putting the Pro Bowl in the middle of the season and taking away bye weeks, because these guys they're getting hurt. They need some time to recover. So I like your creative thinking, because we need new ideas. I just unfortunately don't think that one's super realistic.
All right, let's go over to Mike in Glens Falls. Mike, you're on.
Hi, thank you very much. Two things. First, about the length of time in baseball. I just retired from being a high school baseball umpire, and about 15 to maybe 18 years ago, National Federation instituted a rule, whereas if a player steps out of the batter's box on a ball that is caught by the catcher, the umpire can call a penalty strike. I don't see that in Major League Baseball, and this idea of fining them or if they do something like that, I find a little bit ludicrous. So I think if you call a penalty strike, a lot of these guys will stay in the box. Number two, on the NFL ratings, look at the number of where the games are being played. You have Sunday afternoon, Sunday night, Monday night, Thursday, and all. And when you get towards the end of the season, they're playing on Saturdays. All of that reduces the time that players need to recover from the injuries that they may have sustained during a Sunday game, and that is reduced, and preparation time for the next opponent is reduced, and I think that contributes to the what I consider the poor quality of some of the NFL games. I think it's more a question of being overexposed.
Keith Strudler, is it a question of quality or is it a question of the balkanization of the time frame? In other words, in the old days, Sunday was sort of that sacred time when the football games happened, early 70s, Monday night football game. Now it's all over the place. What is the issue here with the low ratings, Keith Strudler?
I think the issue with low ratings is probably hard to unpackage because some people would suggest it's the politicalization of football. Some people would suggest, and data would support this a little bit, that it's concern about the concussions. Some people would suggest that people just aren't watching television anymore, and we'll see if some of the new ventures with Amazon and Twitter, which is no longer, will change that. They're not going to change the moving this to weeknights. I mean, if the players' union wanted that change, they would have negotiated that a long time ago. They negotiated for money instead, and that's going to be the way it is. So. We'll see about ratings for the NFL are going to be an ongoing problem. I don't see it moving the other direction. I think if they are able to hold on, that will be a win for them in kind of the current landscape. As for the length of baseball games, if we're going to go down that route, let me tell you, if you're going to be changing the rules for youth baseball, I got one for you. If you're going to hold a baseball game where kids are going to be playing and parents are going to have to watch, you are required by law to keep the snack bar open. I have sat through way too many of these games, and I'm like, boy, wouldn't some cheese fries be good? But I can't because they only open on a Saturday or something like that. That is cruel and unusual punishment. I don't care whether the kid's in the batter's box or out of the batter's box. I would like to have like a big vat of cheese fries and a couple things of Cracker Jacks. I'll watch games all night. So
wisdom.
Let's make that one a reality.
You are making me so hungry right now for some cheese fries.
All right, let's go over quickly to Frank in Water Valley. Frank, you're on.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. Now, before you were talking about arena football, and what hit me in the head, so to speak, is that arena football, I watched it once. No care for it, especially because the players I've hardly heard of, and where are they going to go? Probably nowhere. Just like you have the college teams here. I love the college teams here. Even though they aren't like big schools like, say, Marquette or something like that, they're fun to watch. The players seem to be more interested in what they're doing and not in where they're going to go after school. And I've gone to games over at the Tri-City Stadium, and it's so much fun. It is fun. You know that some of these players are going to get somewhere, and you only spend $7 on a ticket. And there's all this fun things going on. You could actually get to the snack bar on time.
But is that the only reason it's fun, Brittany? In other words, is it only fun because the player has a chance to move on?
I think that can be part of it, but I don't think it's entertainment. So I think you look at college athletes and the Valley Cats minor league systems. Yeah, you're cheering for them to do well in the future, maybe make it to a World Series one day. But arena football is more solely entertainment. So if you're going there to be entertained, then be entertained. And I don't think it would hurt if these guys got out into the community and tried to make some of the connections that, again, the Adirondack Thunder do, the Tri-City Valley Cats do. But I think you can just let yourself be entertained.
Our number here
I totally agree.
Go ahead, Keith.
I would add, if you ask anyone who works in minor league baseball, they'll tell you their number one competitor are the movies, not other professional sports teams. And so it is very much an entertainment property. And I agree, the athletes getting into the community is really effective. I think if you look at the growth of professional lacrosse, it's a real nice model. And they are very community-focused. And it's a sport that's doing pretty well across the country. And they have a very small kind of economic model they're working with. Players don't get paid a lot. They're very community focused. Stadiums are small. So I think that's really the model for the future.
I think low minor league baseball is tremendous.
So fun.
And you know, back in the old days, well, no, I mean the Double A Yankees.
You got to put the netting up, though. I almost got killed at it the last time I went to. I mean, they don't net anything up. And I look, I'm one of those guys. I go to a baseball game, and I am looking at anything but what's happening on the baseball field. And so last time I went to a minor league game, yeah, well, I mean, it's hard. I mean, all right. So, Brittany, when you go to a minor league baseball game that you are not covering, please tell me the level of interest you have in, like, you know, when it's 7-1 and you got some guy who's, you know, 1 year out of high school who is going to be not playing baseball 3 years from now. Tell me your level of interest.
Oh, my gosh.
Oh, I'm usually eating.
Oh, my gosh. You know what?
Thank you. So you're looking at your food.
I'll concede the netting. I'll totally concede the netting. They should have netting. Why not?
But minor league low-level baseball is fun. Whether the players make it or not, the quality of play is usually pretty good, and there's lots of it around. They have that great stadium in Hartford, and they have the Mets AAA team is going to be out in Syracuse.
Yes.
Minor league baseball is terrific.
Is that a punishment? What happened?
Okay,
did they do something wrong?
Okay. This is Keith Strudler's last appearance on this program.
What did they do to get sent to Syracuse?
I just want to make it clear that Keith can be found on Twitter, and that's all. Let's go to Andy in Johnstown. Andy, you're on.
Hi, I was just wondering, you know, the U.S. men's national team, they failed to make the World Cup for the first time in, I think, almost 30 years. I was wondering how you guys think maybe they could move forward and if they could look to maybe the women's program for guidance.
Keith.
Well, men's and women's soccer is a very different animal, and particularly since the amount of attention that the people pay to European soccer and the flux of top athletes from all over to Europe. So it's not quite as simple as doing kind of homegrown athletes that stay here and play here in the U.S. That said, there is certainly a cultural shift that needs to happen at the national level in American soccer. They're going to have to get younger. They're going to have to figure out whether the MLS is truly the feeder for that. What's the relationship between professional soccer and World Cup soccer? And I would also suggest this is, and as everyone has said, this is catastrophic for soccer in the United States. For them to not have a presence in the World Cup is really, really detrimental at a moment when the sport is very much having its kind of, I don't want to say renaissance, but this is its coming out party right now, with all deference to everything that happened in the 70s and 80s and after that. This is its moment. To be out of the World Cup puts them in true peril to kind of fall behind.
Peril of what?
Peril that kids who are ready, my kids, who love soccer right now, will either stop caring as much because we won't have the fervor that a World Cup brings, or we'll start paying attention almost exclusively to Premier League and European soccer, at which point the MLS will have that continued problem with an identity. And so it is critical for the United States to have a strong homegrown soccer program where players stay here, play for our professional teams, and then go represent our country in World Cup competition. If that doesn't happen, soccer may be popular, but it will be popular as an import property only.
Brittany, can't this just be a teachable moment? Every team hits a low point. I mean, look at the Mets.
Yes, but not every team's low point comes in the biggest moment on their world stage or the opportunity to get to the World Cup. Selfishly, I'm so bummed that the men's soccer team, because there's nothing like going out to a bar where everyone's dressed in red, white, and blue and watching the World Cup, and I get why that's so exciting. I don't know, Keith, and you obviously know more than I do about the actual research behind this, but I've always felt like the hype behind the World Cup was a little bit overstated. You know, is a kid really going to quit because their team's not in it?
Of course not.
You know what? What you lose are casual fans. Do the hardcore fans still watch the World Cup? Absolutely. And even some of the incidental fans, and certainly in the globalization of this country and the, you know, our greater recognition of international athletes, people will watch, but you lose the opportunity to bring casual fans who didn't know much about the sport. Now, whether that translates into future professional success, look, you can ask the women's soccer in America about all that, because it hasn't happened for them. So, you know, you have a point on both sides.
Quickly, and we only have about 45 seconds here, let's go over to Lee in Greenwich. Are you in Greenwich, New York, or Greenwich, Connecticut, Lee?
Greenwich, New York, of course.
All right, you got 30 seconds.
Hey, best baseball to watch is Cape Cod League baseball. They got it right. They've got the business model right. They've got the snack bar down, and the players are exciting.
I've heard that. I have actually heard that from a number of people, that it's great baseball to watch. Well, thanks, Lee.
Wood bats, right? Don't they use wood bats?
They all use wood bats. This is not right. Junior 8. This is not Little League. They use
wood. No, don't they? Don't they use aluminum in any of the minors?
No, man.
None?
People will get killed. No. All right.
He's in college.
Yes, that's different. We're done. All right, Brittany, what's on the program tonight on CW15?
We have so much Section 2 soccer action. Everything yesterday was rained out, so it's all been moved to today. We have sectional field hockey semifinals. I have already stacked my A block for the show. Highlight after highlight, you're going to want to tune in.
I like when you said A block, because most of the time on radio, it's all the D block. Hey, Keith, thanks for being here, man. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. It's been a pleasure. And stick around. I did a little commentary on WAMC later about the virtue of 26.2 miles.
Sweet. Support comes from the 1850 House Inn and Tavern, now taking reservations for romantic getaway packages and special events, heated deck for waterfront dining, the1850house.com. Ruby Star Healing Arts Rhinebeck, offering spiritual consulting, energy healing, psychic readings, yoga, massage, beauty treatments, private hosted events, crystals, and more in a setting overlooking Rhinebeck, rubystarhealingarts.com. The Egremont Barn, bringing music, food, entertainment, and community to the Berkshires. This week's artist and tickets are available at theegremontbarn.com. And the Poughkeepsie Public Library District, presenting a gallery talk at Vassar College on October 26th, and Abenaki author Joseph Bruschak, November 2nd, POKLIB.org. Thanks again to Brittany Devane of CBS 6 and Keith Strudler for joining us today. Thank you for the great calls and the emails. Zach Malloy was our engineer. Your phones were answered by Colleen O'Connell, I think, today. She's gone, but I think it was Colleen, right? I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, the Gardeners return. Right now, stand by for news.